This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Did you have your oatmeal this morning? Are you glowing in the dark now? This is a story that sounds like a conspiracy theory. But it's not. It's been 30 years now since President Bill Clinton apologized for the crimes of experimentation that took place within our government during the Cold War and after World War II. There were some pretty shady things that went on. We're going to talk about one of them that is coming back to light again on the internets. It's a story that you may not have heard of. I had not heard of it until I started digging, and it was a rabbit hole I was disturbed to go down. It's something we need to remember, because at the time that this was taking place, we had a world and a country that in large part blindly just trusted the government. Well, they said it's good, then this must be the right thing to do, right? We should do this, right? What could possibly go wrong? They always have our best interest at heart. Oh! If we don't remember our history, we are bound to repeat it. So let's talk about what happens when children become convenient. When people in power, scientists, bureaucrats, corporate sponsors, because that was part of this, look at a group of kids and see not lives, not futures, not even names, but numbers, data points, disposable variables, and a controlled environment. This isn't a story about negligence. This is a story about a mistake. And it's about deliberate choices made in boardrooms and laboratories and government offices, choices that turn vulnerable children into unwitting test subjects. And for what? To figure out how well the human body absorbs iron and calcium from oatmeal? That was the big scientific mystery of the day. And to solve it, they fed radioactive material to kids who never had the chance to say no. This was in Massachusetts, Waltham, a post-war America in the thick of its atomic age glow-up. Science was booming, funding was flowing, and radiation, the same force that flattened cities, was being pitched as a miracle tool for everything from medical diagnostics to food safety. The atom was in, and so was pushing the ethical line. At the center of all of it was the Walter E. Fernald State School, a sprawling state-run institution originally built in the 1800s as a model for how to care for boys with intellectual disabilities. By the 1940s and 1950s, that model had fallen apart, like many such institutions of the era. Fernald had become a warehouse, a place to store children the state didn't know what to do with. Some had developmental delays. Some were orphans. Some were simply poor or labeled slow in school. And labels like moron, imbecile, and defective were stamped on their files, often without clinical bias. And once you got placed at Fernald, you stayed. There was no oversight, no real escape. And that right there is why Fernald became a testing ground, not because of the science, because of the silence, because these kids had no advocates, no parents pushing back, no legal guardians raising hell at PTA meetings, no media attention, just locked gates, state wards, and a staff willing to play ball. In 1946, researchers from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology started working with Fernald staff to conduct nutritional studies using radioactive tracers. The idea was straightforward in theory. Dose a food source, say milk or oatmeal, with a small amount of radioactive iron or calcium, then track how the body absorbs and processes it. Use the data to improve the nutritional content of foods or to understand mineral uptake in the bloodstream. From a pure research standpoint, it sounds innocuous. But the method? Well, that's where everything kind of breaks. They didn't inform the boys what they were being fed, They didn't explain the purpose of the study. They didn't get true informed consent from parents. Those things didn't exist back then. They didn't even label the experiments as potentially risky. Instead, they wrapped it in a marketing bow, the Science Club. Literally, they called it the Science Club. Let's break that down. The Science Club was essentially a recruitment strategy. Kids who joined were promised better food, day trips outside the facility, and special treatment. Some were taken to Red Sox games, others to beaches. These weren't normal privileges for the boys at Fernald. This was bait. And the hook was radioactive oatmeal. Their breakfasts were laced with isotopes, radioactive iron or calcium, depending on the study phase. Some were fed the materials orally, others in the second phase of the experiment were injected directly with radioactive calcium. Blood samples were collected afterward, and in some cases, stool and urine were tracked. The goal was to measure absorption and retention in the body. Again, scientifically sound if you're studying rats in a cage, but these weren't rats, they were children. MIT ran the technical side of the research. Quaker Oats, yes, that Quaker Oats helped fund the study and provided the cereal. Their interest? Pretty simple. If the results showed that their oatmeal boosted calcium or iron absorption, they could use it to push health claims in advertising. Build strong bones, backed by science. That kind of thing. Never mind the radioactive part. And funding from the Atomic Energy Commission gave it the federal seal of approval. It wasn't fringe science. It was government-backed, Ivy League certified, and corporate approved. The trifecta of American legitimacy. Just one thing missing. Ethics. Some of the parents did receive letters, form-style notices, suggesting that their children were taking part in nutritional research. But those letters didn't mention radiation. Didn't describe the procedures, didn't offer any sort of risk disclosure. In fact, many were worded as if participation was already a given, unless the parent objected, opted out, or not opted in. No mention of isotopes, no mention of tracers, just vague science jargon, or the impact and the implication that this was good for the child. Because God knows, if the government says something's good for the kids, it must be true, right? And for the boys whose parents were dead, missing, or had signed away guardianship, well, then no one asked at all. Let's talk about the kids. Some were as young as 10 years old. Most were under 17. And according to later investigations, at least 74 boys were used in these experiments between 1946 and 1953. That's not speculation. That is documented. And again, let's stress this. Many of these boys were labeled morons in their state file, not because they had severe cognitive issues, but because that's how the system operated. Label first, ask questions later, and once labeled, your rights disappeared. That's what made Fernald the ideal lab. Not the facilities, not the medical staff, but the kids, because they couldn't say no. When the studies ended, the data got published in nutrition journals. The scientists got their citations, the funding flowed, Quaker Oats got what they wanted. And the boys, they got silence. No follow-up, no disclosure, no medical monitoring, just forgotten. Until the 1990s. That's when a flood of declassified documents and investigative reports started blowing the lid off a long hidden corner of Cold War era science. The Department of Energy launched a national review of radiation experiments on humans. Investigative reporters dug into government archives, and tucked inside the stack was Fernald. It was a 60 Minutes segment that finally jolted it into the mainstream. Survivors of the Science Club, at that point in time in their 50s and 60s, came forward. One man, Fred Boyce, told reporters that he remembered the perks, remembered the blood draws, remembered being treated special, but never, not once, was he told what was in the food. Another former resident, Joe Almeida, says the most lasting damage wasn't the radiation, it was the label moron. That word stamped on his state file followed him to adulthood. It was hard to get jobs, hard to be taken seriously. The world looked at him the way the system had, disposable, less than, unworthy of dignity. It's a lot. It's a lot that went on in this study. In 1994, the state of Massachusetts formed a task force to investigate their findings, and they were stark. No evidence of long-term physical harm from the radiation itself, but an absolute failure in ethics, consistent, and human dignity. The boys had been deceived. The state had enabled it. The institutions had closed ranks. MIT issued a half apology, said the doses were low, claimed no one was harmed, expressed regret. Quaker Oats did something similar, sympathetic noises, no real accountability. President Bill Clinton, in the 1995 address, issued a national apology, not just for Nald, but for the entire era of human radiation testing. He admitted that the government had failed its citizens, had exploited the vulnerable, had justified the unjustable in the name of science and progress. And yet justice never really came. In 1998, a class action lawsuit against MIT and Quaker Oats was settled for $1.85 million, split among dozens of men. After legal fees, many got less than $25,000 for the oatmeal. No criminal charges, no institutional reckoning, no reversal of the labels stamped on their childhood files. The checks were mailed and the press moved on. But here's what didn't fade. The lesson. This wasn't an isolated case. This wasn't one rogue experiment. This was a system that decided the easiest subjects are the ones who can't fight back. And it built an entire research infrastructure on that foundation. What happened at Fernald lives on in every institutional review board protocol, every ethics form, every required module for graduate students conducting human studies. The lesson was hard earned. Bought with the bodies and dignity of boys who were never told the truth. And it's still relevant because the instinct to cut ethical corners doesn't disappear. It evolves. It finds new targets. Undocumented immigrants, incarcerated populations, children in underfunded foster care systems, people who lack the social capacity to say, no, you can't do that to me. We cannot tell this story and file it under, that was then, because the conditions that made it possible, vulnerability, silence, institutional arrogance, those conditions are still very much with us and alive today. So no, this isn't a story about radioactive oatmeal. This is a story about power, about what happens when a system stops seeing people as people. And people stop seeing people as people because they got a job to do, just doing our job. About the quiet, clinical decisions that leave real lives wrecked. Not in one dramatic moment, but in slow, grinding erasure. And if we don't remember it, if we don't name it for what it was, a crime of convenience, a violation of trust, then the next science club is already on the horizon. And they're already meeting. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section. Wherever you are listening to this, be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of the coverage, the many cases we have here for you. Probably not a lot more about radioactive oatmeal, but it's a story I thought we should share nonetheless. Hit subscribe on YouTube. And like I said, let me know your thoughts in the comment section on this crazy chapter of American history that we all thought was so normal at one point in time. It's funny what time does when you look back at the behaviors of those before us. Well, they didn't know any better. Or did they? And they just chose not to act ethically and appropriately. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.